A while back, someone asked if I would spend some time in some sermons dealing with the topic of respect. And I'm sure that person thought that I ignored the request, although I have not. In fact, what I've done for the past three Sunday nights that I've spoken is to kind of lay the groundwork for this sermon, this series of ideas that we'll be looking at as we think about respect that one has for elders, for parents, for spouses, for authority, all of these different areas. In the last three sermons, we've been looking specifically at the book of Ephesians. And in the book of Ephesians, we've been dealing with the walks that Paul talks about, where we are walking according to our calling, where we're walking in love, where we're walking with care. Because really, that walk that we're talking about lays the groundwork, it lays the foundation in order to have the kind of respect that God has. And if you notice in the book of Ephesians, the latter part of the book is dealing with these things that we're going to be dealing with. Husbands and wives, children and parents, slaves and masters, all of these different kinds of respect, different kinds of views toward authority. So the Apostle Paul took that approach in saying, let me first of all show you how to walk. And once you learn how to walk, then you're going to have the kind of respect that you need. Now this evening, as we begin this study, we're going to talk about really the respect that must be present before any of these others can be there. Long before we ever master the idea of parents and children and husbands and wives and employers and employees and such, we first of all have to come to appreciate the respect that we are to have for God. And once it is in place, then it's just so amazing how everything else falls into place. How when we read phrases such as, in the Lord, children, obey your parents, in the Lord, we understand that that kind of respect is resting on this primary respect for God that we're going to be dealing with tonight. And so as we approach the lesson this evening, it's going to be somewhat of a word study. We're going to look at three different ideas, three different words that I think give us an appreciation for what God expects from us, of the kind of respect of which He deserves from everyone, but especially those who are of the household of faith. So let's begin, first of all, with the English word respect. It's always interesting when you go back and you look at where our words come from, because most of them have a very fascinating story. Things that we would never really associate with the present use of the word. And I would say such is the case for this word respect. It actually comes from a Latin term which means to give a second look. As you think about that, we still use it in that nuance even today. Think, for example, if someone were to ask you a question. Maybe you had been looking for a car, a used car. And someone that you both knew had a car for sale. And the person asked, well, have you gone over and looked at Joe's car? And your reply is, I wouldn't give that car a second look. Well, what does that mean? Everyone would understand that you have no respect for that car. You know something about it. You know perhaps that it's been run much too hard, or it's not been taken care of, or it's a lemon, whatever. And so you won't respect that car. You won't give that car a second look. Well, the idea then in the opposite is, if you will give something a second look, it means that it has gotten your attention. Maybe you're passing by a store and there's a display in the window and you kind of walk by it. You think for a minute, you turn back around and you give it a second look. That's respect. So we think about that then in terms of respect for God. And so what it means for us is that we're giving Him a second look. We've heard about Him. We've read about Him. Perhaps we've been taught about Him. And so rather than saying, well, I wouldn't give the Lord a second look, as many in the world would say, we say, on the other hand, I'm going to respect Him. I'm going to give another opportunity to learn about Him. It's fascinating when you look at the writers of the New Testament, or the Old Testament, how often they gave God a second look in their writings as they talked about Him. The Old Testament is filled with passages where people are saying, you need to take a look at who God is. And I'd like for us to turn to just a few tonight, just to get an appreciation for this. And let's begin over in 1 Chronicles chapter 29. David here is offering a prayer. And this prayer is one where God is being respected for who He is. And so let's just take a look as David is talking about the Lord, talking to the Lord, in fact, in this passage. Chapter 29, we're going to begin in verse 10. And here we read this, "Therefore David blessed the Lord in the presence of all the assembly, and David said, 'Blessed are you, O Lord, the God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heavens and in the earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord. You are exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all. In your hand are power and might, and in your hand is to make great and to give strength to all. And now we thank you, O God, and praise your glorious name.'" Now I want you to note in that passage all of the descriptors that are being used, where David is saying, "Lord, you are this and this and this, and all of the good things that we get from you." Well, do you see a sense of respect there? David is saying to the people through this prayer, he's saying, you need to give God a second look. You need to appreciate Him for who He is. Now, David is a fine one to lead us into a discussion simply of saying that the psalmist would oftentimes give God a second look. I think one of the reasons the book of Psalms is a book of comfort to us is not because every psalm is this picture of pleasantry and everything being good and laying down by peaceful waters. The book of Psalms takes us on a very emotional journey. But yet scattered throughout these psalms are those that are appreciating God for who He is. Let's look in Psalm 5. We're going to look at just three examples here within the book, though we could spend so much more time making the point. But look in Psalm 5. And as we look here again at the writings of David, we look beginning in verse 4 and he says, "For you are not a God who delights in wickedness. Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all evildoers. You destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man." And so as David gave God a second look, he said, "You are a God of righteousness. You are not a God who's going to tolerate this evil. You're not going to allow that to stand in your presence." Look at another example, going over to Psalm 18. Again, as we note here, a respect for God and the things that are being said of Him, we look down to verses 2 and 3. Again, David writing. He says, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised, and I am saved from my enemies." You think David ever gave God a second look when it came to the idea of protection? Consider David's life that we're told about before the kingship, where Saul is hot on his trail, always trying to kill him, always trying to do him in. But yet what David is saying is, it is through the Lord that I find that strength. He respected that. Look at just one other example, going over to Psalm 52 this time. And as we note here, again, the final writing of David that we'll look at in this, we look in verse 1 where David is talking about the love of God when he says, "Why do you boast, O evil, O mighty man? The steadfast love of God endures all the day." So in all of these things, what David is saying is, when you give God a second look, you're going to appreciate what you've got here. You're going to see a God who can do any and everything that needs to be done. But as we consider these things, I want to talk about one other nuance of the word that we translate into respect. When we take it out of the original language, the writers, as they use the word respect throughout the Bible, there was a second meaning. It's not only that idea that we're appreciating God for who He is, respect in the sense of how we normally think about it. There's also the idea of having shame. And one might think, well, that's a polar opposite. On the one hand, you've got this appreciation. You've got a God who is being viewed in such a masterful way. But yet, on the other hand, how do we fit in this idea of having shame? Well, I think it's not so hard once we understand where we're coming from with this. And the man who illustrates that the best for us is actually the man Job. As we think about this idea with respect, Job gives us the picture of what it means. Let's go over to his book, and we're going to begin in chapter 36. In chapter 36, Elihu has come on the scene. You'll recall that he is the one who has kind of been standing in the background, listening to Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, and Job go at it in all of these speeches. And as we look at the writing, or the words here of Elihu, I want us to note what he says about the Lord. I don't know that Elihu gets everything right, but he certainly gets right what the Lord is all about. Look with me beginning in verse 22. He says, "Behold, God is exalted in His power. Who is a teacher like Him? Who has prescribed for Him His way? Or who can say, 'You have done wrong'? Remember to extol His work of which men have sung. All mankind has looked on it. Man beholds it from afar. Behold, God is great and we know Him not. The number of His years is unsearchable." We go just a little bit further over into chapter 37. And we note here, looking again down to verse 22, where Elihu says this, "Out of the north comes golden splendor. God is clothed with awesome majesty. The Almighty, we cannot find Him. He is great in power, justice, and abundant righteousness. He will not violate. Therefore, men fear Him. He does not regard any who are wise in their own conceit." Now you look at that, and that sounds like it comes out of the book of Psalms, doesn't it? If we heard that, we might guess, well, that's a Psalm of David. But here's another perspective, where Elihu is saying, God is above everything, and everything about Him demands respect. So that kind of makes the point that we just previously made. But let's go a little step further in this. When we come to the closing chapters of the book, God challenges Job. Job has come very close to calling God unjust. He's talked about God setting him up as a target and taking shots at him, taking practice at him. And he said some things that come very, very close to blasphemy, never quite reaching that point, but yet coming much closer than God wanted. And as God talks to Job in chapter 38, look at what he says. It says, "God answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, 'Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you make it known to me.'" Now here's what's about to happen. God is about to say, "Job, you do not respect me in the terms that we just talked about. You have questioned me in areas that did not need to be questioned." And so God then goes to great lengths in these next few verses to talk about, "Job, can you do this? Can you take care of that? Can you keep nature in track? Can you do all of these things?" And Job gets the point very, very quickly, realizing what he had done. Now let's look at his words. Look at how Job is going to show respect to the Lord as we look at the answers that he gives to him here. Verse 40 is God still speaking. The Lord said to Job, "Shall a fault finder contend with the Almighty? He who argues with God, let him answer it." Here is Job's reply. "Then Job answered the Lord and said, 'Behold, I am of small account. Who shall I answer? What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I have spoken once and I will not answer twice, but I will proceed no further.'" He's saying, as I look at what I've done in shame, now I'm approaching you. I realize the lowness of my status in your presence. God's not done with him. He continues on. He talks about more of these questions. But then look over to chapter 42, where Job now says, beginning in verse 2, "I know that you can do all things." There's our first idea of respect. We're giving God a second look. "And that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this who hides counsel without knowledge?" Now here's our second part. Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know. Hear and I will speak, I will question you and you make it known to me. I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. Job says, in my shame, I now know who you are. And so I think as we look at this idea of giving God a second look, the idea of respect is seen in two ways. It's when we exalt His name, when we say the Lord is worthy of all of these things, as we saw the writings of David. And it's also when we acknowledge our shame. How much greater God is than us. How much better God is than we are. How fortunate we are to be a part of His family. And so in that, I think we see the two ideas coming across as we think about this one concept of respecting God. But let's look at a second concept. We also want to look at the idea of reverencing God. Because that as well is associated with the idea of respect. And I want to illustrate that from one of the parables of Jesus. Go with me over to Luke chapter 20. Luke chapter 20. And as we look at this parable where we're reading about these wicked men who would not honor the master, and He's sending servants to them and they're persecuting those servants. We look at verse 10 and He says, the time came, He sent a servant for the tenants so that they would give Him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the tenants beat Him and also sent Him away empty-handed. And He sent another servant, but they also beat and treated Him shamefully and sent Him away empty-handed. Verse 12, and then He sent a third. This one they also wounded and cast out. Now I want us to pay attention to verse 13. Then the owner of the vineyard said, what shall I do? I will send my beloved son, perhaps. I want you to look in your Bible at the rest of this. And if you're reading from a translation like mine, it's going to say, perhaps they will respect him. Now, if we were in a Bible class, I would ask for all different translations to be read now. Because at some point, we would come across several translations that would say, perhaps they will reverence him. And the reason for that is, when we look at the word respect as it's sometimes translated in the Bible, it shows the idea of reverencing, of revering someone. Now, let's just follow this along. Because what it would say is this, perhaps they will yield to my son. The idea in the case of this parable with the word respect or reverence is the idea that we are showing deference to someone. We're yielding to someone else's authority. So in this parable, the master has sent servant one, servant two, servant three. None of them have received reverence. They've not been revered coming in the name of the master. And he says, perhaps then my son will be reverenced. Perhaps they'll yield to him. Now, just to finish the parable out, we understand that they don't. And we see the danger here of what happens when we fail to yield to the Lord. If you look down to verse 14, but when the tenants saw him, they said to themselves, this is the heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance may be ours. And they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. What then will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and destroy these tenants and give the vineyard to others. And when they heard this, they said, surely not. Verse 17, but he looked directly at them and said, what then is this that is written? The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces, and when it falls on anyone, it will crush him. Here the Lord is saying, when you fail to yield to the Lord, when you fail to give deference to the Lord, you're showing Him disrespect. You're failing to reverence Him. And this is the punishment that will come. And therefore, what we learn from this then is that when we talk about the idea of respect, we are saying that we are going to peaceably yield to the Lord. Now, why would we do that? We'll tie it back in with our last point. Someone says, why should I yield to God? Why should I show deference to God? It's because we recognize His greatness. That's what David told us. He said, you need to give Him that second look. You need to understand who He is. Look at one other passage that so well makes that point. In Psalm 8, when I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? We understand that the Lord is higher than we are. We understand that He is one who is exalted, who is so far above us, that in every way we show Him deference. In every way we yield to Him. Let's make the point from one other passage. We go over to the book of Hebrews, and we find here that the writer is talking about earthly fathers. Now, this is a familiar passage to us. But note in chapter 12 and verse 9, besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. And if I understand correctly, we would not be damaging the text in the least to say we reverenced them. We revered them. Why? Because their position was above ours. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? What's he saying? He's saying that as kids, we didn't understand what was going on. When our fathers disciplined us as children, we viewed that as something that we didn't like so well. But then when you get older, and you got that work ethic ingrained, and you've learned how to submit to others, and you've learned how to operate functionally in society, you reverence that father. You revere him. You respect him. Because he had the foresight to teach you something when you didn't know that you need to be taught that something. Now, if we understand that with fathers, the writer says, how much more should this be with the Lord? When we think about the Lord and the things that He does for us, and indeed the things sometimes He does to us or allows to be done to us, what the writer is saying is yield to Him. Show deference to Him. Don't arch your back up. Don't say, well, that's not anything I'm going to take part in. If the Lord's going to treat me like that, no. The writer says you yield to Him. You allow that to be the kind of thing that's going to teach you what you need to be. And appreciate the Lord for what He's doing. So, we exalt His name. We understand who He is. Out of our shame, realizing how low we have fallen in sin, we respect Him because He's taking us back. We think about yielding to Him, and I think we're getting a pretty good picture here of what the Lord expects in our respect to Him. But let's look at one more word here. We go over in the book of Hebrews just a little bit further. And we find, again in chapter 12, going down to verse 28, this command for us says, therefore let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, and thus let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe. When we come to this word reverence, this is a different word in the original language. When we look at this word, it's actually the word yubia, which means this. It's the idea that's translated here in the word reverence. Now, here's an interesting little tidbit. When you look at this word and you go to your Greek mythology textbooks, you may very well find this being one of the Greek deities. This was the word that was used in Greek mythology for the name of one of their gods or demigods. That was supposedly the personification of discretion, caution, and circumspection. So here the Greeks and their elaborate scheme of all of these gods that supposedly lived on Mount Olympus and all associated with it, they said that this is the God of discretion, of caution. And what the writer of Hebrews did is he picked up that word and he used it here for the description of how we approach the Lord. So what's that saying to us then? What that's saying is when we read this verse, and let's read it one more time, the latter part of it, and thus let us offer to God acceptable worship with holy caution and awe. Does that make a point to us about how we should respect the Lord? It reminds me very much of when Moses was brought into the presence of the Lord, and the Lord was speaking to him. It says that he saw him in the burning bush, and God called out to him and said, "Moses," and he said, "Here am I." Then he said, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." What the Lord is saying, Moses, use caution when you come near me. And the point of this is the holiness of God must be respected, and it must be appreciated, and the Lord must be reverenced. We could make all kinds of points about that, couldn't we? As we look at that concept of respect, we certainly see that in worship, the primary context here in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 28. How many times are we hearing amongst our religious friends about all of this worship that they so enjoy, that they so like, that they just get so much out of? Let me tell you, it doesn't make a bit of difference what we get out of it. Worship is not given for us. Worship is given to God. And if someone says, "Oh, I can just worship God so much better if I can just do it my way, if I can use this instrument, or if we can use this style, or if we can be contemporary, I just get so much more out of that," let me tell you, they're not approaching worship with holy caution. They're not approaching worship in such a way as to say, "Here is what God has said. And when I come into His presence, I'm going to do it His way." We think about the point that could be made in doctrine. Someone says, "I just don't like what God has to say on that topic." And to that I would say, "I'm just so sorry." God has said, this is the standard. As we talked about this morning through the apostles, this is the way it's to be done. And someone says, "I'm afraid that's going to hurt someone's feelings." They're not approaching God with holy caution. They're not respecting Him. And in the sense of Moses, kind of metaphorically speaking, taking their shoes off in His presence. No, when we approach the Bible, we're not approaching it from something that's going to please us. What we're doing is approaching this as God's standards, where He says, "This is how you please me." We think about that just in every practice of life. We say, "Well, I like doing things this way. I like being this. I like using these words. I like watching these shows." Whatever the case, we've got to say, am I respecting God? Am I approaching Him with this holy caution, with discretion, with circumspection? You remember the third of our walking sermons? Walk with care. It's exactly the idea the apostle was talking about when he said, "This is how you please God." As I was preparing the lesson, I came across just a very good illustration. It was from some while back, as can be seen in the subject of it. But the guy said, the writer said, it's as if you are carrying a Persian vase across a room. You carry it with caution. You carry it with respect. Why? Because you don't want to break it. You're not saying, "I think that vase just demands too much out of me." No, what you're saying is, "I'm going to do everything I can to keep this intact." And that's the standard that we've got to have when we approach the Lord. When we're looking at the things that He's told us to do, we approach it as though we have something very precious and we don't want to do anything to damage our relationship with Him. And when we can understand that, we understand that taking great care is a far cry from Pharisaism, isn't it? Someone says, "Oh, you're too cautious. You got to have book and chapter for everything." That is exactly right. Not because I'm trying to be like a Pharisee, but because I'm trying to be like God. I'm trying to respect the way He's told me to do things. And when I can do that, I can appreciate Him for who He is. And you put all of these word studies together, the second look, the exaltation, the shame that we're to have, the holy caution, and what we find in all of this is the respect that God says we are to have for Him. And when we can develop this, as we said at the beginning of the lesson, all of these others start falling right into place. All of these others we find ourselves being able to carry out because we respect the way the Lord has said to do it. So the question comes to us, do I respect the Lord? That is very much going to be told by my attitudes and my actions. I can know whether I respect the Lord. Because when I look at what He has said, if I appreciate it, and to the best of my ability try to carry it out, the answer to that question is yes, I respect Him. But if I'm not a Christian, what that means is I don't respect Him. If I understand what it means to be a child of God, but yet I still continue standing where I am, refusing to come to Him, I don't have that holy caution, that care, that discretion that says I'm not right with God. I'm not exalting Him in my life. I'm not admitting my shame before Him. These are the kinds of things that will bring us to Christ. When we come to the attitude of saying, I understand that becoming a Christian, submitting to Him, is the ultimate show of my respect for Him. And so this evening, I just encourage you, if you're not a Christian, think very soberly about what you're saying to the Lord. What you're saying to Him now is what the people in that parable said to Him. I'll not respect your son. I'll not show deference to your son. But the good thing is the Lord will allow that to be forgiven. He'll allow you to come into His family, into His kingdom as a servant, and He'll forget about all of that. And He'll help you every step of the way in your life with Him. Or maybe you've known that at one time and you've forgotten it. You've not shown deference to Him. You've gone your way rather than His way. He's a forgiving God and will forgive you if you come to Him with a penitent heart. This evening, if you need to show true respect for God in any way, and if there's any way we can assist you in doing it, don't do it. Won't you come while we stand and sing together?